Welcome back. 347, 730 AM, 102.9 FM, WTNT. Andy Parks and Fred Grandy, live from the Washington Times this afternoon. And we're joined now by the Washington Times editorial page editor, Brett Decker. Hello, Brett.
Hey, I guess Andy and Grandy.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Back again for the very second time.
That's right.
I feel like I'm in an interrogation room. I have a light bulb hanging over my head and both of you pummeling me from each side.
Yeah, we'll
the only thing he's missing is the donuts.
Yeah, that's right. All right. We were all standing together watching the ceremony that took place over at Andrews Air Force Base a short time before 3 o'clock. And obviously it's a very sad occasion when you have four bodies being returned after an assault on American sovereign territory. We already had a call this afternoon on the air about this being politicized. By virtue of Hillary Clinton being there this afternoon, by the president speaking there this afternoon. Your thoughts on that?
I think there's plenty of room for criticism of the administration on this. But, I mean, today I think it's appropriate for them to be there and welcome the bodies back. So I don't really think that's really the problem. I think part of the content of what they said really didn't hit the mark exactly. I mean, Hillary said that the American victims were helping Libyans build a better country, and it kind of fits into this pie-in-the-sky view of the Arab Spring, that, giving more of a voice to the mob in Middle Eastern and North African countries works. And, I mean, the problem is, a lot of these dictators weren't great guys, but they kept a lid on some of the fanaticism.
Well, it's the old Gene Kirkpatrick thing. I mean, we did business with a lot of people we wouldn't want to have in our living rooms, but they created a kind of stability in countries that otherwise wouldn't have it. And the Middle East is a living example of that right now.
Yeah, and I mean, in Egypt especially, right? I mean, Mubarak was our guy, and he did what we wanted. And, some of these people aren't that unenlightened. It's just when you're in some of these countries, what are your options? You know, the years I spent in Asia, I spent a lot of time with members of the Marcos family and the Suhartos, and a lot of those people were pretty Western, pretty educated people. But, I mean, look at if you're in, like, say, Indonesia in the 1960s and you have radical Islam tearing one side of the country and communist on the other, you're not going to be like a soft guy and run that place.
But I'll tell you one of the things, and you probably noticed this having been over there and having spoken to some of these leaders from Asia. One of the things that they master if they want to play on the world stage is American public relations techniques. In other words, for example, the Muslim Brotherhood came out with this statement of regret in the New York Times a day or so ago, and there was no apology in it. It sounded like it had been written by Chuck Schumer.
It actually might have been.
And this is that's what I'm worried about.
I mean, this is one of the things that's interesting is in Asia, some of the doors that were open to me to a lot of these leaders were actually by Americans who were their advisors there. And some of these people had worked on campaigns here. And then when they checked out, they figured the real money was with these overseas parties.
President of Egypt, Mohamed Morsi, was a teacher in the California university system and was a member of the Muslim Student Association and obviously had a lot of westernized experiences, which he is now, I think, using to his advantage as the head of a country that is clearly anti-Western.
Right, we're even professionalizing the bad guys.
That's right. They're training here, unfortunately.
Yeah. Let's get to the root of this particular rage that we've seen, though, over the past couple of days. Is it indeed the result of, 13 minutes of YouTube video of some, warped film?
I mean, I think that's a really important question, Andy. And I think that's just baloney, I mean, these are coordinated attacks by Islamic ringleaders, Al-Qaeda is involved. I'm friends with one of the Libyan princes that runs the majority party in Libya right now. And I talked to him the morning after this tragedy. And he said, these things are totally organized. And one of the things they're worried about is having Libyans in a lot of these places. So,
well, the other thing that I found striking was even if there is a kernel of truth in the movie being the catalyst, that movie was aired in Egypt on a Salafist television station.
Huh, that's interesting.
And a lot of these guys have been released by Mohamed Morsi. These are guys who are in jail, like Mohamed Zawahiri. Does that name ring a bell? He's Ayman al-Zawahiri's brother. So to some degree, if they did find this video, they obviously saw a tremendous potential in it to incite a lot of young people. And let's face it, the Middle East is crawling with young people who are into social media. What a great way to spread the message.
And have never known anything but hatred for the United States of America.
Absolutely. Yeah. Although they love our devices.
Like America, they have a bunch of young people without jobs. So they have
That's an excellent point.
They're mad and they have time on their hands.
Yeah. And they look over here and they see what they think is full employment and luxury, and compared to their lives, of course it is.
Yeah. The Independent reported State Department had a credible threat 48 hours in advance. Obama administration denies it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about this when we were watching the president and the Secretary of State earlier. I think it's impossible that there wasn't some kind of noise out there that intelligence could pick up. When I was in Asia, I'd had death threats a lot, and I'd had generals contact me because they heard radio noise about attacks on me because of my reporting. Mm-hmm. If a little reporter for the Wall Street Journal has that kind of, if there's something going on to go after an American ambassador with 400 people, there's noise there to pick up, and we just didn't get it. And I think it once again highlights kind of the failures of our CIA and right? I mean, the Soviet Union, the wall comes down and we didn't know.
Yeah.
400 people attack a U.S. Diplomatic installation and they don't know installation. And part of it is it's sort of too liberal and it's too much like the State Department. And we need to get some
whatever
people
happened
on
to
the
trust
ground.
But verify.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Arabic translation for that is, but we should be saying that right now. I mean, if you look at a guy like Christopher Stevens, surely the people that attacked that facility knew he was going to be there. Otherwise, they wouldn't have bothered.
Yeah, well, he had just arrived back there, right? I mean, he had been away for days and had just returned.
But again, unless they're actually publishing their schedules to a lot of these militia groups or whoever this consortium of jihadis are, they found out because they had connections.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I mean, so they're getting information in real time somehow.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
I want to turn to the statement from a former president, Jimmy Carter, came out to correct President Obama after Obama went on Telemundo and didn't know whether Egypt was an ally or an enemy. Jimmy Carter has come forward to say Egypt is an ally. Oh, so I guess that's all taken care of now.
I misread that. I thought he said Egypt is an amigo.
That's right. That's funny because I think Carter thinks Hugo Chavez is an ally. So, I mean,
he certainly thinks Hamas is an ally.
Yeah so I mean, this thing could go on forever.
I guess my bigger question is, why all of a sudden has Jimmy Carter become relevant? He was at the convention through video down there, and now we're hearing from him again, injecting himself into this equation.
I mean, I think everything about this year has a lot of Jimmy Carter deja vu about it.
Absolutely.
So I think that and a lot of it, right, is the, you know, having an ambassador killed like we did in Afghanistan in 79 and and having Islamic radicals overrun our embassies. I mean, I think it just has this this kind of eerie Carter is back feel. So
And you haven't even gotten to the economy yet.
We haven't even gotten to the economy.
Yeah, no
precisely.
Kidding.
So yeah. I think the more we see a Jimmy, the better it is for people to make the connection.
The bounce is gone, evidently coming out of Charlotte. You know, the president was reported, at least in a couple of polls, to be up 4 to 6 points. All of that's gone now, and if you're following the daily tracking information, it appears Romney has regained the lead over Obama, 48% to 45%.
And what I want to see is the polls next week after all this trouble this week.
Because the polls that you were talking about, Andy, were all taken before any of these events
blew up
in the Middle East.
So I think we'll see a little more movement for Romney next week. And another good number that was out there is when you get down to the specific questions people are asked in these surveys, who do you trust more in the economy? Romney's winning 50-43.
Wow.
So that's that's a 7-point
that's a big spread.
Divide, which is pretty good.
Yeah. Joe Biden told a group yesterday in Wisconsin at a campaign stop that he's been called an expert on foreign policy. Is he?
I don't know, Andy. I've been called a lot of things in my life, too. A lot of them not repeatable on radio, so.
But I mean, the timing of it.
It is embarrassing. I mean, he was chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee.
I was going to say,
right?
the guy did have some chops as supposedly a prominent senator who knew something about foreign policy. But he was the guy who originally said, shouldn't we just divide Iraq
into three parts? That's right.
One of the things he did say, which is now I think coming back to haunt us, is he was a big proponent of counterterrorism as opposed to counterinsurgency in Afghanistan. And everything I've seen from counterinsurgency doesn't look like that's been the solution.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, he's here and there. I mean, he was serious at one time. It's hard to remember.
Yeah. See, I don't remember that. Yeah, right. That's kind of going away now.
You know, there was a long, when everyone was caving on China, I mean, he was standing up for China, for human rights in China. So, I mean, he was one of those guys, you know, and he's still kind of good to have around mostly for punchlines.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, he makes everybody else look good. We were watching this ceremony and we said, surely they're not going to let Biden speak.
Oh, my
speak
God.
At this.
Oh, had they done that, I don't know what would have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't take a chance like that.
I mean, he tries to look better, hair plugs and everything, but he still makes everyone look good.
I think they've dug those hair plugs too deep, don't you?
Yeah. That's probably what it is. Yeah,
affecting brain matter.
Yeah, it could have. And then finally today, I'm going to drop down the list here. Michelle Obama says the biggest national security threat is obesity.
Yeah, I'm willing to cut the First Lady a little slack on this one because what's her option? Admitting that her husband is the biggest threat to national security?
I mean, there are no choices. You're right.
You know, I mean, they're attacking us everywhere, and it's because her husband is weak. So she reached in her purse and pulled out something, and it didn't really work, but it's better than telling the truth, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, great to talk to you. Thank you, Brett. And you'll be in here on Monday with Fred. So
this is good. I have both sides beaten up this time. So
I'll be kind.
All right. Brett Decker, Washington Times editorial page editor. It's 3:59. Stay tuned.